You're listening to an official podcast of the New York City Church of Christ in Brooklyn, preaching God's word to New York's biggest borough.
And if you could please keep Lucas in your prayers. He's sick, like baby sickness, lots of mucus and coughing and stuff. And Hannah's actually just recovering from being a little bit sick as well. So they're both home right now. So if you can pray for the three of them, that'll be great. Oh yeah, Hannah's pregnant. Yeah. Yep. So I'm on my Steve Ravel, you know, like 17 kids. So just please keep our family in your prayers. Hannah's due on November, sometime in November. November babies. Thanksgiving Day, actually. Well, who knows, right? Yeah, who knows? Who knows? Please keep us in your prayers, because this is going to be interesting. You ever think you understand something? Like, I just get it. And you conduct yourself in that manner for a very long time, and then one day something happens, and you're like, oh my goodness, I was way off about this. So I used to think that the stop signs that swing out of buses, for school buses, are treated the same way that regular stop signs are, where you pull up to it, and it says stop, and you stop, and you look left and right, and then you go, because it's a stop sign. Judging, so much judging. It's a stop sign, right? So we were in Baltimore, and there was a school bus in our complex, and it happened. The bus stopped in front of us. The stop sign swung out, so I stopped like a decent human being. I stopped. I looked left and right, and then I moved forward, and the bus driver starts honking his horn, and I'm like, "What is this guy's problem? Like, what are you doing?" I stopped. I looked. There's nothing there. And then Hannah was like, "Steven, you know, it doesn't work that way." And I'm like, come on, Hannah. Come on now. It's a stop sign. You stop, you look, and then you go. And then she helped me understand that, like, I've been literally since the day I started driving, completely had no idea that it actually meant stop forever. Like, put your car in park. Don't ever drive again. But when I realized that I was wrong about that, I could not go about things the same anymore. Like, there was way too much at risk for me to know that that's not what that means, but keep behaving like it is. Church, pardon my forwardness here, but I think we may have worship mixed up. I think we may think, and if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, and this is just a revelation for me. But I think sometimes the way we talk about worship is stopping and then looking left and right at the bus stop sign, and it's just not, it may be partially based on a little bit of truth, but there is some, but we cannot afford to be wrong about this. We cannot afford to miss what worship actually means. Being slightly misinformed about this is very dangerous. I have about 18 hours worth of sermon that, you know, we're not going to get into. But I'm nowhere near close to getting to scratching the surface of what God wants us to understand about worship. So I'm gonna say this as on the front end, that this is me trying to figure stuff out for myself. But I encourage you to, on your own, please study out worship as well, because I could be wrong, and we're gonna need to collectively put our minds together here, because we can literally not. It is too risky for us to get this wrong. Genesis 22. Genesis 22. We're going to read from verse 5. Verse 1, sorry. Genesis 22 in verse 1. Sometime later, God tested Abraham and said to him, "Abraham, here I am," he replied. Then God said, "Take your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the region of Moriah, sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on the mountain I will show you. Early the next morning, Abraham got up and loaded his donkey. He took with him two of his servants and his son Isaac. When they had cut enough wood for the burnt offering, he sent out for the place God had told him about. On the third day, Abraham looked up and saw the place in the distance. He said to his servants, "Stay here with the donkey while I and the boy go there. We will worship, and then we will come back to you." All right, there's a biblical principle or a Bible analysis principle called the principle of first mention. Now, what that means is that in any subject in the Bible, if you go to the first time it's ever mentioned and use that as a foundation to build on, whatever it meant the first time, it'll never not mean that anymore. So the first time you hear faith, first time you hear love, first time you hear patience, that original first time, it may grow, and Jesus can grow on that foundation, but it'll never mean something different. This is the first time that the word worship is used in Scripture. First time. Now, Abraham did not go up with Isaac and have a song service on this mountain. There was no, we're going to do four songs and pray and then communion. There was no songs planned at all. When Abraham, and also, Abraham is not lying about any of this. So I used to read this as he was trying to be sneaky to kind of get away from what he was actually trying to do. Abraham is being 100% honest about everything he says in this dialogue. He says, "We will go and worship." No song service. What he was going to do was give up his son in obedience to God, even if it meant handing over something that he loved, that he invested in, that he prayed for and received. This is worship. God, I will conduct myself in a manner that shows that you are master of every area in my life. That is worship. And here's the flaw with the accepting Jesus as Savior mentality. Okay, congratulations, you accepted. The magic is not in the acceptance, but does your behavior back that up? Does the life you live? Listen, Jesus is Lord regardless of our acceptance or not. Today, I accept that today is Sunday. Congratulations, Stephen. It was Sunday before you accepted it. It just is that way. Now, if I conduct myself like it's a Monday, I'm in the wrong, whether or not I say I accept it or not. So Jesus being Lord is God made that happen. So it's done. Now, worship is I'm going to live in a way, I'm going to conduct myself in a way that shows that in my life that is the case. When your heart and your actions are aligned with the fact that God is master of everything, even if it means sacrifice. We're going to explain this a little bit more right now. You look at Romans 12. So this is the first time it's mentioned in Abraham sacrificing his son. He described it as worship. Romans 12, verse 1, "Therefore I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, offer your bodies as living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the patterns of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will." So sacrifice and worship go hand in hand here. Paul, familiar with the Abraham narrative, very aware that the people that are going to be reading this letter remember from stories that they were told about Abraham being willing to sacrifice his son, then says this: offer your bodies, offer your life as a sacrifice. This is worship. Now, he says, in view of God's mercy, which is extremely important here, because what this means for us is that we need to be aware of who God is and what God has done for us. Mark that as mercy, because it is who God is and who we are. You put those two in a room, God needs to show us a lot of mercy for that relationship to work. And then we behave in a way that says, thank you. Just gratefulness. And the way we do that is not by giving anything other than your entire life. Your life now becomes the sacrifice. Abraham's willingness to sacrifice his son should be matched by our willingness to give our entire life over to him. Can you say it out loud? The number? In here? Wow, there's 400 people in here. That'll mean something in a little bit. Let's do the Greek, right? Patrick started that off. So the word sacrifice in Greek is thuosia, and the root in that is thuos, which means kill. So in sacrifice, something is dying. The Latin origin for sacrifice as well, the front end is sacred, and then the back end is essentially like the position. So you're killing something by placing that thing in sacred hands. So you're giving it to God. This is a lot more serious than singing. When worship became singing, I think we started to lose the sacrifice that was built into the original understanding of what this should look like. Here's why. A couple years ago, I had a pretty old phone that people made fun of me about, but you know, that's the world we live in, right? It's look at your phone, it's big and bulky, and you can't get internet on it. And I didn't want that anymore, so I went to go upgrade it myself. And I went to the place, handed my phone, and they said, hey, if you switch to this phone, you'll get the phone, plus we're gonna send you a $150 gift card in the mail. And 19-year-old Steven was like, done. I'll take it. I'll sign my life away for $150. So I did. I signed the thing, and then I was checking every morning, actually multiple times a day. I was going online and tracking the package. Okay, where is this gift card coming? And then it says it arrived, and I'm looking through the mail for the gift card, can't find anything. I wait a couple weeks, call Sprint. Sprint says, no, we delivered it. And then I ask my dad, like, hey, did you see a gift card thing? He's like, yes. I'm like, oh, great, that's mine. If I could, he's like, no, I bought groceries with that. Now, when Hannah and I moved to Baltimore initially, we went in two cars. When we came back, literally for the wedding, Hannah and I decided that we don't need two cars. Actually, it's very expensive to have two cars. So I'll leave my car, Stephen's car, at my house. And I told my dad, like, hey, if you want this to be Andrew's practice car, go for it. We'll just leave it here. My dad sold the car. Now, you know why I didn't complain about that $150 and the car? Because my dad gave me everything. You know how ridiculous the conversation would have been if I say, Father, I need a word. I bought a cell phone that came with money. I heard that you took that money. I'm going to need you to pay what you owe. You know how just picture my dad's face for a second. It's a silly idea. So when God says sacrifice, and our response is anything other than yes, sir, we're logically just in the wrong already. What's a gift card when I've been given life? This man paid for my food, for my school, for all the food, all his food that I ate. If I'm going to feel anything other than, okay, never mind, about a $150 gift card, I don't understand value. I just don't. So sure, I'll sacrifice that $150 because of what I get to be as his son. So when God tells us, sacrifice, hand over to me, and he calls that worship, our response should be yes. So there's 400 people or so in the room. Can everyone real quick stand up? All right. Now, could my left or the right side, so everyone take a look around real quick. Can you guys all sit down? Thanks, Mark. My left, right section, all of you guys sit down. Right section, your left, all you guys sit down. Everyone except the first row, sit down. Everyone on my left, starting from Eugenia this way, sit down. All right? Everyone but Eddie, sit down. So, is this the room? Just Eddie. That's about the mathematical equivalent of what church is in your week compared to everyone else in the room. About one person, the math is that this is what your 1 2-hour session of church looks like. You know what God would say to this? Where's the rest? You're good, Ed. I used to have to pay my dad car insurance. I think it was car insurance. It was the money that he asked me for the car. And he was like a debt collector. He would be knocking. It's like, hey. And then there were times that I honestly didn't have all of it at the time. So I would give him what I had, and he would just say, hey, well, Stephen, where is the rest? That's when we treat church as the time that we worship exclusively. Where is the rest? That's one person in this room is not this room. If you owe money to your school for student loans and you give them, here's $50, thanks for helping me out. So, where is the rest? If our lives are supposed to be living sacrifices, everything about our lives, every conversation, everything is the sacrifice, and that is worship. And we squeeze worship into these Sunday from 11 to 1. Where is the rest? The conversation of what day are you supposed to worship is a waste of a conversation, because the answer is yes. What day should we worship? Yes. What do you mean, Stephen? Well, yes. How can you segment your life? How can you break off a part? Worship is absolutely everything. Worship is not about tempo and chords in a song. It's about setting our minds to be in one accord with God's will. It is not a style of a song, but a lifestyle of the person singing. It's not about instruments versus a cappella. It's about being used as an instrument for the gospel without noisy distractions. It's not about the song leaders, but are you being led to the Son? It's not about contemporary, traditional, or hymns, but are you content with handing over your worldly traditions to Him? If we think about this like these 2 hours, it's not worship. This only counts as worship if you did it yesterday. That's it. This only counts as worship if you bank on doing it tomorrow. If you're not doing that, then this is a performance. And if it's a performance, then you're allowed to be picky about it and say, no, I don't like that song. I don't like this order. That went on too long. I don't like how they do this. If it's a performance, then absolutely. But if this is worship, then it should have started on Monday, and it continues all the way through, because your life should say, God, I will conduct myself in a manner that shows that you are master of every area in my life. Abraham says, take my son. Paul says, give your life as a living sacrifice. This can only be a worship service if you understand that worship is your service. That's it. We cannot limit this to just songs. We sing because we worship. We sing because we worship. Worship is not an activity, but is a position of the heart in view and understanding of who God is and behaving accordingly. In view of God's mercy, give your life as a living sacrifice. And this is not a foreign idea to us. Let our bosses say, come in a little bit early tomorrow. Yes, sir. I'll be there. Let our career choices say, hey, well, for you to get this done, you need to do this, this, and this. Okay, great. Absolutely, I'm there. Let someone challenge our personal preferences or politics. And we can show incredible amounts of commitment where our heart is. The question we have to ask ourselves is, if we take a biblical first mention definition of worship, I think we have to ask, is it possible that you are having a hard time worshiping God because you're worshiping something else? Is there something else that has the amount of commitment and conviction and focus that is designed for God to have, but now we're putting career or family or here's my reputation that I'm trying to uphold? If something else is in the spot that's supposed to be, that was designed for God, and you're trying to come here and worship, there's a reason why nothing's clicking. It doesn't fit because you have it in the wrong section. And what God says is, Abraham, give your son. Okay. And then Paul reminds us in Romans to give your life. Let's look at Matthew 16. Matthew 16:26. This is one of the last public speeches that Jesus gives before he gets turned over. Matthew 16:26 says, "What good will it be for someone to gain the whole world, yet forfeit their soul? How can anyone, or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul?" I love the fact that Jesus says forfeit, almost as if to correct himself from saying lose. It's like lose, actually, I mean forfeit. Because really, here's the options that God gives us. You can either win or you can quit. That's it. Like you can sacrifice and live a life full of worship and give everything to him, or you can give up. Now, losing isn't really there. So it's not like you try really hard and you just fell short. No. You either stick with it and do the best that you can and win, or you have to say, you know what, I can't do this anymore. So if God puts that in our hands and says, worship me this way, and I promise you I'll make it worth your while. You cannot lose if you worship me. And you will be handing over, like, here, I'm not gonna try anymore as the only other option. We need to just remind ourselves, I think, all the time that there is guaranteed victory for those that sacrifice and worship in the way that God asks us. And you can write down Hebrews 11:17. Abraham did not, so this is by faith chapter. Abraham did not go to sacrifice Isaac with the faith that God is gonna say, no, stop, I'll provide something. When Abraham says the Lord will provide a lamb, he's looking at the lamb. So Hebrews 11:17 says that Abraham's thought process was, well, I wasn't supposed to have this kid, and if God was able to magically present this child in my life, then he can magically bring this child back from the dead. Meaning my intention here is to sacrifice Isaac. Like, that's what he gets, and that's what he understood worship as being. My worship to God is that I'm going to hand over absolutely everything. And there was not a song sang on that mountain. So for us, I think we need to worship. I think our lives need to show that we worship God, especially when he guarantees that when you worship me, you will win. I will give you everything that you need. You know what's interesting about the principle of first mention is that that's also the first time that love is used in the Bible, when God says, Isaac, your only son, whom you love. That's the first mention of love in the entire Bible. Now, if this is worship, if worship is a state of the heart, it's how you can, it's a permeating behavior in all of our actions, then when we come here together on Sundays to sing, You know, you can tell. Real football fans don't just watch football on Sunday. They don't. And it's more than just Monday or Thursday also. You're watching throughout the week. You're watching player, you know, scouting reports. You're watching the draft that's about to come up. You're watching the same SportsCenter rerun over and over and over again because you just want to make sure that you didn't miss anything. It's a very different experience when you're really, really invested in this team that doesn't know who you are versus, oh, it's Sunday, there's football on, I guess we're going to watch football. And you see these more at Super Bowl parties than anything else. There's a group watching the game, and there's a group at the table eating and playing spades while the game is going on. Now, you're all there. The behavior happens on Sunday, but those that really get it, watching the game is just the reward of the week's worth of buildup to that. So when we're here singing on Sunday, this should just be this is what my week was like. My God is awesome. I've been behaving that way all week. Now I get to sing about that with my family. If it's anything other than that, again, it's a performance. It's not worship. If you don't worship 7 days, you don't worship one day. So when we come together, there should be a very, very, there should be a extremely noticeable difference between people that sing these songs because it's true and people that sing these songs because it's Sunday. There should be a huge, huge difference. Now, I think again, I have another 17 and a half hours. But I think when we start becoming uncomfortable with certain like collective corporate singing to God things, you can only do that if you get distracted from why you're here. That's the only time that you can facilitate the thought process that says, I don't like this style of you only have room in your head for that if you're not really worshiping. Now, there are many ways this can be done. I think you can visit our family of churches all over the world, and it's a very different experience on all. You can visit Harlem, it's within a 25 mile. I mean, it's here, but the experience is going to be very different. Now that's okay, that's fine, because worship isn't just this. It's your lives, and now we get a chance to, again, get almost reward ourselves from a week full of difficult life, and now we're here collectively giving adoration to God. Let's look at Romans 12 again, and then we'll close. Romans 12, therefore I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. Your jobs, the way you conduct yourself at your job should be have the same heart of Abraham sacrificing his son, which means it doesn't matter what's going on here, I'm going to put God above everything. And this is going to show itself in many different ways. There may be conversations that are just not godly for you to be involved in. Remove yourself. Because your entire life should be, my God is awesome. And there's certain behaviors that don't fit with that idea. If you can't be thinking and believing my God is awesome and conducting yourself in an office gossip. It can't happen. You can't be critical of your boss and wish bad upon your boss if your God is awesome. The workplace should be aware that you are striving for excellence, not just doing enough to say that you work there, because my God is awesome. School, the way that we conduct ourselves at school with our classes, and it's so easy to cheat nowadays. It's so easy. It's almost harder to not cheat now can my God be awesome and me be cheating in this class? It doesn't work. I cannot say that my God is awesome and I'm lazily just kind of trying to, oh, well, I'm just here because I'm here. It doesn't work. On your way to work, on your way to school, whether you're driving or taking the subway or the bus, if that isn't the hardest place to be righteous, I don't know. I think God put us in New York for that reason. Because if you can get through transit, here's confession. We live on a very narrow street, and you can't fit a truck and a regular car. It's a two-way street, and the truck is huge. Now, this truck is like, it's a truck. Trucks are big. So everyone can see it, and I'm waiting for the truck to pass so that I can fit my car through where I need to go, and I'm getting honked. Like, they're like, baby, I'm like, are you? So I rolled down my window, and I looked. I gave the look at the guy. I'm like, I finally became a New Yorkian, I think. How can my God be awesome and I'm impatient with people? You know, like if we're singing these things, then on our way to where we're going, our actions should say, I'm willing to sacrifice my son. And if I'm willing to sacrifice my son, then I'm willing to take a couple of unnecessary car horns in order to get to where I need to go. Our parenting, the way we parent our children, should not say, I have high expectations for you. Should not say, if you don't get this, then I'm not going to be proud of you. It should not say, put school and getting a career above everything. It should say, God, you are master of my life. Therefore, master of how I will parent my children, and I will conduct myself in a way that shows that that is the truth. That's tough. But if God is awesome and I'm claiming to worship him, that should be evident in my decisions and my parenting. Our marriages, the way we talk to each other, by this all men will know that you are my disciples. God's plan for revelation about who he is how we conduct ourselves around each other. So then the marriage, which is the only divinely determined relationship, that's the only thing that changes your spiritual being is marriage. Of course, then our marriages are the way how easily we forgive, how we do not hold grudges, how we love no matter what, how we're constantly a support. That should be, God, I'm willing to give you everything, including my marriage. And that is worship. That's how it fits into everything. Because every single decision, every thought, every conversation, every action should communicate, this is who God is in view of God's mercy. Now, why do we do that? Because our God is awesome. He can move mountains. And I think when we can wrap this idea of, and there's so much more to be discussed on this topic, which is why I think it's important for us to go home and continue this in our private Bible study. But this can change everything. If we look at this, not so much as this kind of outward adoration and praise and like, oh, God is great. Do that as a support to the rest of your life. That every single thing and that's hard. That's not, this isn't a, oh, just flip a switch and everything's going to become smooth sermon. But hopefully it provides some awareness for all of us that those that claim to be true worshipers of God can be that in everything that we do with our lives. Why? Because our God is awesome.
Thank you for listening to this broadcast of the New York City Church of Christ in Brooklyn. For more information about our church, visit bkchurch.com.